Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. Hello, and welcome to Decisions That Matter. As always, the podcast today is brought to you by Procurated, and we are lucky enough to have four former Chief Procurement Officers joining us today to have another Q&A discussion. And today we dive into the topic of supplier performance and what to do if a supplier is underperforming, has not been able to meet the specs of a contract, or has gotten to the point where you're considering having to move on to another supplier. Of course, one solution to that problem is going on to Procurated.com and searching for suppliers before you make that decision to see if there's any red flags that might lead to poor performance or inability to deliver on the contract in the first place. But if that was not possible, or you're in a situation right now where you have to consider moving on from a supplier, this conversation does offer some really good tips on how to approach that. I mentioned it in the episode, but just want to reiterate that we really do believe that every good procurement is a partnership between the government and the supplier side. So keep that in mind as you listen to the episode today. All right, I hope you enjoy. Thank you all for joining me today. We got a couple questions from our listeners that we want to ask the Buying Bunch here today. As part of the Buying Bunch, we have Jane Benton, Jason McDonald, Jason Souza, and Mike Smith. Thanks for hopping on with me today, guys. So the first question that we want to ask and we want to start with is, in an ideal world, every single supplier and every relationship would be perfect and everything would go exactly according to plan. But what is sort of the process and what happens when maybe something isn't going quite right on a project, maybe a supplier's underperforming? How do you approach that relationship? And then if it doesn't improve, what are the next steps in terms of remedying that situation?
Well, I think at the starting point, it's, you know, certainly having good terms and conditions, you know, a good legal review before contract execution, and making sure that the vendor or supplier has clearly understood the terms and clearly understood the requirements of the project. So, you know, in terms of the way to sort of avoid getting to that situation is ensure that your starting point is clear and understood, and make sure that the supplier knows how to play in the government sector. Lots of good education and communication in that process.
Yeah, I think, Jason, you're right. Ongoing communication with that supplier is the key. They really need to understand what the scope of the project is, what the expectations are, what you expect them to do, what the performance measures are from the very beginning. And that has to happen at the start of the project or at the start of the service term. And that's just sitting down, making sure both sides know what the expectations of the other is, putting it down pencil to paper, and agreeing that, you know, certain deadlines are to be met, certain time frames, and agreeing to those, and then project management going forward and keeping track of all of that. And then if it's not being met, you know, there's certain realities and consequences that need to take place during the project. But that communication is the key, ongoing communication. If you let it slip and let it slide, there's going to be problems down the road.
On big projects, say like a big construction project or something like that, is the project management usually somebody on the government side, somebody on the supplier side, and then they're just making sure they're always on the same page? Or does one side tend to take more of that control or burden of managing the project?
Well, I think usually from a procurement perspective, as the owner's representative, you've hopefully hired a project manager, certainly uniquely unattached to the contractor or supplier. You want a third party, unbiased opinion of the project and its status, and you need someone to manage it. If those skills or that experience isn't available within your agency, certainly that's a consulting contract to look at up front on big at-risk projects, depending if it's design, bid, build, or other methodologies to get those things constructed. So I think it's, to Mike's point, it's continual monitoring and managing of that project while you're in process, identifying, you know, where the risk is, having a contingency that's appropriate to the size and scope of the project. And, you know, really probably at some point it's understanding back at the bid process what the contractor's experience is in projects at this level, whether good references and any bad references that have been related to this project as to the potential impact. You know, I think the old phrase of by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail, is the surrounding mentality on every construction project. Anticipate it not going well, anticipate knowing when you're going to need to step in, and anticipate what the outcome or remedy is going to be on the other side. Hopefully none of those things happen, and hopefully you don't have to take those steps. But if you don't and you're not prepared to, that will be a cause of great concern in project's completion time.
Going back to, you know, communication, I mean, I think that's, you know, the key to all of this. The mantra that we tried to live by was, you know, over communication is hardly ever a problem, but under communication almost always is. And it's just so frequent that, you know, when you have this perception of an underperforming supplier, you might actually be able to track that problem back to something that the government isn't doing. They didn't tell the supplier something. They didn't set those expectations ahead of time. And so, you know, it's how many times have we heard of contracts where it's just sign it and go perform. And then it's only when a problem arises that, you know, you try to deal with it. But if you're proactively dealing with it, then you can try to avoid those kind of issues. But even in that case, there are, you know, we all have examples of big contracts that, you know, you try as you might, they fail, and you have to go down this road of, you know, well, how do you, is it something we can stop? Is it, you know, do you have such a large investment that you have to try to keep it going? Or you know, I think, I mean, at behind it all too, I think all of us in procurement have those set processes, you know, a cure letter and a follow-up and then legal action and all of that. But, you know, really the reality of all that is different depending on the project.
You know, contract administration is something that we all talk about, and it's been talked about for a long time, but I think as our projects, whether it be IT projects or construction projects, whatever kind of projects, become larger and more complex, really that is something we've got to be able to focus on, is that contract administration. One of the best practices, I think, is having the key stakeholders, including the contractor, from the very beginning to sit down once that contract is awarded, to go over every, you know, the major key things that need to be talked about in result that, you know, that you're wanting to get and pay for coming out of the contract. Because it never ceases to amaze me that the project manager a lot of times has not read through the solicitation, does not know all the requirements that are required. So it helps everyone to go over that, because we in procurement turn that over, right? We turn it over to the using department. And I think setting that stage in a formal meeting really does help establish what our expectations are. And when there are issues, here's who you need to come to. And that maybe periodically, you know, have that committee meet just to touch base on what's going well and what's not going on.
And you raise an interesting point, Jane, in that discussion, is to really enable that user or customer department within the agency or organization, enable them to manage the contract, give them the tools to manage the in and out on the day-to-day. No one expects procurement to be the subject matter expert, and who better to stop a project or, you know, call into question practices or deliveries or however it's being delivered than the customer department. They're the ones that know what they want. They're the ones that know how it should be done, or they expect it to be done. And the more procurement can kind of prop them up to be strong advocates on behalf of the government, then I think it leaves everyone in a better position and a higher likelihood of project success.
You know, this also feeds back into what we've spoken before about procurement skill sets of the future, things that are going to become necessary. To that point, that very point, you think of some project management tools that you can use here, and we started using them on larger projects, are really simple tools like a project charter. You know, sit down and think through what this project is going to look like, what you want the outcome to be, who are the stakeholders, and just the act of thinking through that before you start. It goes back to Jason's point of failure to plan is planning to fail, you know? just thinking through that is a big deal. And another really useful tool for just kind of mapping out, hey, when we have problems, when we hit roadblocks, we have questions, RACI matrix, you know, the RACI matrix, it's just, you know, names or tasks that have, and then names and who you go to, depending on what task you're at. All right, who's responsible for this? Who's accountable for it? Who do you go to when you need to get some information, or who do you need to keep informed? Just having really simple things like that. And, you know, in a project charter, you have a scope. And when people start, you know, it, inevitably your user agency, the contractor is going to start talking about something that's kind of outside of that. You can use that document to rein them back in. There are a lot of ways that we can manage these kinds of larger, especially the larger projects, to, you know, get to some of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I think that is important too. You said scope is that every project has a defined scope based on the procurement. And there will be some suppliers who will try to either go outside of that scope, or who have overpromised, we'll say, in their offer of what they can potentially deliver. They'll overpromise and underdeliver. So having a very clearly defined scope in your project is extremely important. Here's exactly what we ask for. Here's what you promised you would deliver. And here's what the expectation is on the delivery. And going outside that scope is not an option.
I think touching back upon where Jane had started on this track of thinking, but really think about applying sort of construction management techniques to all genres, to all categories. You know, I know that there's probably been a lot of IT projects or you know, in other areas where, well, we'll just do it, we'll just buy it, we'll just have them do it. And I think if you go to construction as the model, where, you know, certainly the delivery of the work as a project has been very well mapped out, very well segmented, very well tracked, and there's a million tools, as Jason's indicating, about project management there. But apply those same principles to other categories. You use it for office supplies, use it for janitorial service, use it for you know, drone services or anything else that you're looking at. But really, again, define what you're asking them to do. Be flexible enough in the process to adapt as their needs or their capabilities change or adapt, and as the agencies need to adapt. But I think there's a lot of things to be said for pre-planning and really using the tools that are available widely in other categories beyond just construction.
So if everything that we've talked about is kind of implemented and for some reason there's still a huge blocker, the project gets halted, for some reason there's something that's keeping it from being finished, is moving on from that original supplier to another supplier something that you can go to the number two supplier that you were considering in the first place and award them the rest of the contract? Is it something that has to start all the way over from the very beginning? How does that tend to work?
Well, I would start with it will depend. And it will depend on your agency's preference. It will depend on local law and statute. You know, from the world of construction, at least at the municipal level, those projects are all bonded, which is essentially an insurance policy. And the moment that contractor has stopped performing, you're calling the bond. And now the bond company owns the project. They'll do it the way they're going to do it at the least amount of cost. And you've lost control. And so, you know, there's an incentive on the contractor side because they'll get paid, right? And there's an incentive on the government side to not let it result in that because they've lost control of the project. So yes, there's a way to get to number two, but no one wants to go down that path by choice at any point. So there's a lot of energy and effort to avoid that solution. In the end, you know, it becomes a legal entanglement. It's a contractual issue that's going to be resolved in courts if that's what it comes to. And in the end for that, taxpayers or ratepayers don't win. They pay way more for a project that was intended to assist or support or, you know, solve a problem in the public sector. And that's not a good outcome.
Oftentimes, outside of construction, it depends on the category, obviously, but oftentimes you can transition to a new supplier either by selecting that number two if you're, you know, fairly close to the beginning of that solicitation process or that award process. But if you're fairly far into it, you can transition to a new supplier by going to a cooperative purchasing contract or cooperative purchasing vehicle and finding a suitable supplier that can meet your needs and adopting that new contract with that new supplier almost immediately. And then transitioning out of the supplier not meeting your needs to the new one. That's one way to get it done. Sometimes you have to wait, maybe have a multiple supplier until that first contract expires. Other times you don't. Maybe there's an out clause in your contract. But usually there's a way that you can transition from one supplier to another in most categories through cooperative purchasing.
Well, I think one of the things to look at is going back to that original contract, what are the penalties that can be applied to that supplier? And it does get into a legal issue, as Jason mentioned. There are remedies, or should be good remedies inside your contract. You don't want to go down that path unless you have to, but there are times, because you're right, it is going to cost more, because for that new contractor or new supplier, no matter how they're coming back in there, they're going to have to try to figure out what the original contractor did and supplier did. It's a nasty situation, but sometimes to me, the earlier you can cut it, the quicker you're going to, you know, the better off you're going to be, because you haven't gone so far and haven't given them so much money, because usually there are incremental payments on that. So there's just a lot of factors to consider.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think the one nice thing, we've talked a lot about sort of what can go wrong and things that have definitely gone wrong in the past. So it's definitely worth talking about in a real issue. The one thing that when I've talked to people on both sides, on the supplier side and the government side, is in most cases, it seems like both sides really are coming to the table and like a good faith effort, not only trying to do a good job on the contract and on the project, but like the ideal situation for a supplier is they do a good enough job that they become a regular supplier who has government business for the next 25 years. The good side is that I think most people are, if this situation arises, are trying to solve it in the best way possible. But it is nice, and I think for everyone in our audience included, to know that if you're in a situation where you feel like you're a little bit stuck, or something's not going the way that you should be, there's ways to remedy it or to solve it.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.